Good morning. Welcome to IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Paul jamming out. It's the Tuesday show. We got some fun things to talk about. We're going to talk about some of the best position rooms, then we're going to talk AP poll. We're going to talk a little bit of Ewer's performance in the preseason game. But we're actually going to open with some interesting Mateer news. Before we do that,
some interesting material.
There we go, dude. Inside Texas, guys, right now. Crazy amount of information, articles dropping all the time. Team news from scrimmages, from practices, all of that. You'll know all the battles, how everything's going, injuries, any of that stuff. You want to be locked in, guys. And you can get Inside Texas for $1 for your first week. And as a bonus, your membership includes a complimentary year to The Athletic. The man sitting next to me dropped the best Longhorn football preview in the world, the 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus. You need to buy Thinking Texas Football today. Links are all in the description. Physical copy for your bookshelf. If you want it on Kindle like me, go ahead and get it. You will not regret it. As well as SEC previews, as well as a recruiting piece from Eric and the modern world of roster management, NIL, all that stuff. If you want to be a smarter fan, know your team at a deeper level, you need to buy Paul's book.
Links in the description. Hey, Connor, I just want to compliment you as the producer because our intro music is fire.
I know, dude. You loved it. I can see you dancing, dude. It just gets you in the right mindset, dude.
I said, let's do It Takes Two by Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock because wow. There's two of us and we rock. But you were like, no, man, I got some more basic stuff that
I'm going to choose one of the five YouTube non-copyrighted songs. And this is one of the five that works. So there we go. Good morning, AR, Roaster, Justin. Sugarcane Dad. So Paul literally was like, hey, Connor, you're 2 minutes late because you're just talking. And I was like, all right, let's go, man.
Connor's all proud of his Richmond Spider shirt.
I am not. You're the only one that's mentioned it this
far. Oh, Justin Wales. Yeah. What the save.
Yeah. I do like the shirt, though. It's pretty cool.
I mean, it's all right.
Good morning, guys. There we go. Bert, great way to take us in. Thanks for the super chat for sports gambling, USC versus UCLA. So, yeah, we can talk the Mateer stuff. So, for anybody that's not aware, I guess some weird fan went and searched his Venmo or Cash App or whatever it was. And, you know, you have to put in the little byline, you know, what you spend it on. And the ones I can say on the show, were for sports gambling. And then this specific one, sports gambling, USC versus UCLA. And then another fan, because fans are apparently great detectives, went and found out that there was, in fact, a USC-UCLA game right then. So that seems to line up. So it's pretty funny. And On3 reported that OU is aware, and Mateer did tell them he had never sports gambled. And so it's going to be funny. We'll see what comes of it. It's a little bit – I don't know how you prove it, but – if it was just sports gambling without naming the exact specific game that did occur right then, and he would have been a freshman his freshman year of college, so it wasn't a high school thing. So what do you do here, Paul?
I mean, you have to suspend him for 2 years and send a strong message about the sanctity of the game.
Yes, he cannot play in any Red River games.
He can't play. Yeah. He has to sit out. They have to start Hawkins. Yeah. And they can only run quarterback draw.
Yeah. Yeah. Run right to the sideline. No one's open, and then you have to run out of bounds.
I don't write the rules. I'm just telling you you have to preserve the game, Connor.
Well, it's like, you know, he puts a lot of dumb stuff. I was telling Paul, you know, dumb young guy humor. You know, you would always, even when we were like in high school, would put dumb things in the byline, right, that I don't say on the show. But there's a culture of like joking about whatever you're sending. But like I said, where he went wrong was – naming the very specific game there. So I don't know what that means. And where was he at that point? He wasn't even at
– He was a redshirt freshman. He wasn't even starting.
But was that an Incarnate Word, right? Wasn't he there first before watching –
Here?
Yeah, I can't remember.
No, I don't think so.
Who am I thinking of? Cam Ward?
You're thinking of Cam Ward, dude.
I'm thinking of Cam Ward. So, I mean, yeah.
Dude, like, come on. We're supposed to be subject matter experts, Connor.
Yeah, I think I just got Cam Ward in my brain.
If you ever hire me for murder for hire in the Venmo where you pay me after I murder someone on your behalf, don't write murder for hire plot
Legal consideration.
Gun emoji. Gun emoji.
Yeah.
Paul, don't do that because that's incriminating.
But I need it for my books.
Well, you do need it for accounting. I was going to say
you need it for tax purposes. So
put Furter for Meyer.
There we go.
You know what I'm saying?
The FBI is like, oh.
They're like, this pig Latin is perplexing.
What does this mean? So this is the funny part. So this is the range of takes that I hear. Man, who cares? I'm a cool guy and I don't care. And then the flip side is like, you know, the integrity of the sport has been tarnished. So where do you fall on it, Paul? Are you more cool guy?
So there is not like a cool guy thing to this. So the reason you don't want people sports gambling, athletes sports gambling, and they're even like, well, we didn't bet on my own team. The point is you can get indebted to bad people who will make you do things to relieve your debt that relate to your own team and the integrity of the game. So that's ultimately why they have those rules. And also, sport, one of the last true meritocracies where actually you know the results on the field are coming from two competitors vying against each other. If you defy the sanctity of that, if it becomes pro wrestling, then people aren't going to watch it and you're going to lose billions of dollars. So that is really what's at stake. I mean, I don't know what Mateer did. I just think it's hilarious. I don't know, but sounds that like is the bigger reason. So when like, what was it? The On3 guy who was like, you're a square if you think this is a problem.
Yeah, JD with the cool guy take on that one.
The issue is actually fundamentally when you get into gambling, you can get indebted to really bad people. And if you get in debt enough, because here's a reality check. Most people aren't good at sports gambling.
Right.
That's why it's an $18 billion legal industry, right? The illegal industry is about that as well. And a lot of people who bet legally, like on FanDuel, also bet illegally through bookies. And if you get in hawk to a bookie enough, that bookie can make you do lots of stuff you don't want to do. And that's if you look at all the great like point shaving scandals in college basketball history, football history, it's all guys who got indebted. And then the guy said, hey, here's how you're going to work off your debt. And that's the fundamental issue of Jeopardy.
Well, and what's interesting is like, remember when Deckers at Iowa State got in trouble? They were betting on legal platforms even.
Yes.
And they came down on them hard.
Deckers.
If you're Venmoing, you're not on a legal platform. You're paying someone. And he probably paid his buddy that they were watching the game with. That's the reasonable take. But still, that's not even on an official platform. And those platforms, man, they will zero in on you. They get your IP. They know exactly where you're at. Like they snitch on athletes all the time.
So the Venmo side of it is probably
paying a buddy, but you know,
is it not in Mateer's favor that he pays his gambling debts?
I was going to say, at least he's honorable in that.
Yeah, regard, I mean, right? You watch Game of Thrones?
I actually don't.
Whoa, thought you were a cool guy.
No, I'm not a nerd, and I'm not.
You're not into dragons.
I'm not into dragons.
Well, one of the things in Game of Thrones is a Lannister always pays his debts. The real ones in the chat will know. So a Mateer always pays his debts.
I've been working on this expose on Paul. I'm glad you brought this up. Paul is the primary gambling writer on IT. To whom are you in dangerous debt to, man?
First of all, if you follow my columns, 59% winner last year.
He's got dubs. He's not.
And my
even
win angry. Totals were 65%. So take that.
Yeah.
People owe me. I don't owe them.
Paul's the one that's leveraging people.
I didn't bring up Murder for Hire for nothing, buddy.
Yeah. But yeah. So what do you think occurs here? Do you think anything comes of this?
I mean, they could investigate it. I'm sure they'll make FanDuel, DraftKings, whatever, search their stuff. I mean, unless someone really wanted to take him down and they've got receipts, more incriminating than that. Because I've written some interesting things in some subject lines.
Right.
Also, why are you making your Venmo public, idiots?
Yeah.
And by the way, in chat, 80% of you guys do that. Don't make your Venmo public.
Yeah. But yeah, it's guys do write dumb stuff in this subject line. It happens all the time. And I wouldn't have thought anything of it until he named this specific game. So the all-powerful NCAA that people really like to listen to, if they want to go bark up that tree. And I get, I mean, this isn't a, they can't get law enforcement involved to actually hit up Venmo, you know, and be like, hey, where did this go? Blah, blah, blah. But I think it's more just funny. But there are realities to this that especially a quarterback is in a unique – it's hard for a nose tackle to shave, but a quarterback can shave points. So that's what – it's also the position that's a little bit scarier. I'm not accusing him of that. I think he probably bet his buddy on the couch $20 on the game and he lost. That's what's probably happened. But
dude, you got to pull up Sugarcane Daddy's last comment because this is so on point and a comment on our society.
Which one?
I've seen husband and wife have their transactions public. I don't get it. First of all, if you get married, why are you like $8 for groceries? Like, you're married, you weirdos.
Yeah.
And then to have it public, like $11 for Starbucks. Thanks, honey.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you're married.
It's joint. You're just moving your money from your money to your money.
Honey, I'm going to go buy that ottoman. Will you pay for the chair?
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell are you doing?
Just a fun exercise, I guess.
It's so stupid.
We're playing business. We're playing bank.
Oh, my goodness.
But, yeah, it's
– Benji is a real G. Show everybody why.
Yeah. So it's a little bit – it's just interesting. It's funny. It's just a way to make fun of OU. Do I think it's serious? No. But you do – it does matter. And so – at least a discipline of like, hey, you can't do this anymore. We'll see. But now everyone's countering and searching everyone's quarterback's Venmos, by the way. So this is now a very fun. If you're a quarterback of the SEC, private your Venmo right now, apparently, because fans are getting weird with this. It's pretty strange,
man. They're going to find a like two throw Tennessee game emoji, you know, heart, like $15,000.
Yeah, it's
oh god, it's absurd.
SEC quarterbacks, man. There was the fun one last year too with all the Snapchats or whatever. So people seem to like to do this, but man, just don't say the specific game that you're sports. Don't say sports gambling followed by the specific game that you're gambling on. It's
wasn't there fun. Like a couple years ago a big spate of like OnlyFan type girls who were revealing direct messages from different pro and college athletes.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So
I don't I'm gonna sound like an old here. I don't know exactly how OnlyFans works.
It wasn't OnlyFans, I think it was like Instagram DMs or whatever.
Just various like porn stars or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. No, it's a sports platform, dude. It's only for fans, dude.
Don't you Sugarcane Daddy is a divorce attorney.
Oh, then, yeah, he gets access to all the messages.
Well, also, now I know why he's in all of our chats. This is billable hours for him.
Jackpot. All right. Well, that was fun. We'll see if anything comes of it. I don't think anything will. Just a lesson for young guys. Don't put dumb stuff in your Venmo lines because it's a thing. Okay. We're breaking down the top five wide receiver tight end core that the Longhorns will face.
So, just to be clear.
Way up top, man. Come on, Paul. You got to build suspense through the article, dude.
You know what? I should have started with five, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, well, here's why I do it, Connor. Because when I write articles on Inside Texas and I spend, you know, like 6 hours crafting a masterpiece, people look at the headline and they're like, Aggies suck. And you're like, okay, yeah, thanks, man.
I get it. But we don't like the Aggies.
Could you please read the article? Or they'll write something like, is Alabama on here? And then you're like, I don't know, man. Maybe click on the article and read it.
They'll just argue your headline without ever looking at the
actual. But so the point is, these are our opponents. This isn't the SEC. If you want to learn about the SEC, this is it. But this is only the teams we play this year. So there is one team head and shoulders above them all in terms of receiver pass catchers. That's tight ends and receivers, and that's Ohio State. And I really think what actually puts them over the top is Max Clair. I mean, obviously Jeremiah Smith, but Clair was a huge addition for those guys, and he's going to have a huge season statistically. Man,
when you got a great number one, the best thing you can do is give them a number two option for whenever they get
a lot of people call you number two.
Yeah, that's true. That's what we have to do on these shows, dude. I have to make sure you, whenever you get covered, whenever you get covered with a safety, dude, I'm in the slot, brother. I got you, dude. But yeah, I agree, man. And Claire, like, they were using him like a buka in the spring game. You know, he was just going right up the seam, dude. Natural hands, quick for a tight end. So yeah, Claire, I think, is the difference maker for Ohio State.
When I write my game preview for this, when I mention Max Claire, should I have Molly Ringwald from The Breakfast Club?
I knew you were going to do some reference here, man.
Thanks, man.
They're always so topical, too. They're always of this generation, dude, for sure.
I'm really bringing in that 22-year-old demographic.
Yeah, dude.
You're like, really, what's The Breakfast Club? Who is Molly Ringwald?
Yeah. I remember my parents showing me that. All right, Ohio State, number one, makes sense.
Biggest offseason upgrade of any receiving core, Georgia.
Okay.
And I think if you go down to the narrative, last year their receiver room dropped 31 balls.
Yeah.
That will not help your – so criticize Carson Beck all you like, but that didn't help his stats a lot. And so that was a room that really didn't help their quarterback. They had guys who were, you know, positioned as their number one or number two receiver who should not have been. They should have been their number four and five. And that's what they are now. So if you go down, we can show everybody what those additions were to Georgia.
I was expecting some H1s in here. Here we go.
There you go. So they got Zachariah Branch from USC. He's more of an athlete than a refined receiver, but he's very explosive. They got Noah Thomas, big 6 foot.
I like him.
Yeah, big 6 foot six target from A&M. And then Miami transfer Colby Young actually transferred to them last year.
Yeah.
He got only a year of probation, Connor. So he's good to go. He's ready to go. So they're going to have a 6 foot four guy, a 6 foot six guy on the outside. They're going to have Zachariah Branch inside. Dylan Bell comes back. He's going to go from being their number two receiver to being like their number four. So that gives you an idea of how much they've improved the room. And then they've got the best combo of tight ends in the SEC in Oscar Delp and Lawson Lucky. Ole Miss was going to contend with them for that. But Luke Haas, the Arkansas transfer, just got hurt. And he's going to miss most of the season. So it's Delp and Lucky.
Haas got hurt? I didn't know.
Haas is hurt. So the big question is, can Gunnar Stockton unleash this little arsenal that they've got? But I got to give it to Georgia. They really, really improved their wide receiver room.
Cool.
Go Gators.
Florida.
There's Florida. Yeah. Hey, give me an example of what an old I am. It never occurred to me that the rapper Flo Rida, that's Florida. He's from Florida.
Yeah, I remember.
Did you know that?
I had the same moment.
Oh, okay.
Somebody told me, and I was like, wow, you don't say.
Yeah, I don't feel as bad now. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I had the same. I was like, yeah, I guess.
So they got Eugene, don't Google what my dad did, Super Bowl Eve Wilson back. That's a good Google, by the way. And then they got a true freshman named Dallas Wilson, who set their spring game record for receiving and yards and touchdowns. He's basically, I call him a starter kit Roma Dunze, which is pretty high praise.
Was he going to go to Oregon? I can't remember. Was he the
Wasn't one? Everyone going to go to Oregon at some point?
I thought he was going to go to Oregon. Maybe I'm thinking someone else, but okay.
Maybe. And then J. Michael Sturdivant is a guy who started off his career at UCLA, transferred to Cal. He's kind of a good veteran, big body guy, 123 career catches. And then they brought in a couple of really good young players. One of them is a five-star, Vernell Brown. He's just super fast, super quick. So Florida actually has a pretty good wide receiver room. I think there's a pretty significant drop-off to them from Georgia. But I still think they're pretty formidable. I don't know if they're going to get DJ Lagway to ever practice with them, which might be helpful, you know, like – throw the ball to your receivers before the season starts. But I'm just telling you, the talent's pretty good.
Yes, Dallas Wilson was committed to Oregon. Okay, cool.
Good Peyton pull, Hampton, Connor.
6 foot seven, 270 pounds. That's a big old tight end, dude.
And he's got alliteration. That's very powerful.
Yeah, that is true. Plus three speed for alliteration.
Hey, just so you know, there's a kid on my, you know, I'm the guy who's always talking about there's too many Jacksons running around the suburbs. There's a couple of Jacksons on my kid's football team. There's also a Wolf, W-L-F, W-O-L-F. There's a Gunner. There's a Hayden. And there is a kid named Bane.
That's sick.
Bane.
He's got to be a linebacker, right?
Victory has defeated you.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Dude,
the names are awesome.
Yeah. So I just wanted to provide that to the chat. Remember when we went to that little phase where everyone was naming their kid Maverick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was also all the wakeboard names, Braxton, yeah. Like all that. Yeah. So good. Yeah, you got a wakeboard if you have those names.
Got wakeboards.
Whoa, when I was in high school, we played against a team, baseball team. His name was Fire, P-H-Y-R-E, Fire, and his last name was Burns. So his name was Fire Burns. He was actually cold, too. But it was an awesome name. I think
his name wasn't STD.
It was, yeah, that's a good one, too. All right, so A&M interesting at four, right? Because I thought they upgraded really well, too, even losing Noah Thomas. But Concepcion, Craver from Mississippi State.
You and I like Craver. Mm-hmm. He's a guy, like, he's fast. Obviously, he's got track speed and all that. And pads, he's got real football speed for a little guy.
Yeah.
And then Casey Concepcion's really interesting. He was a superstar at NC State as a freshman. He was actually a horrible sophomore. And people try to explain it by, well, their offense and other quarterback. I mean, no, he was the eighth most efficient receiver on his team and then basically kind of quit late in the year and then entered the portal before their bowl. So something was off there. I don't know what was going on with Mr. Concepcion, but he has apparently since recovered his freshman form at A&M. So I don't know what's going on there. He's more of a like yak, screen, bubble, you know, stop route guy. He doesn't like run the full route tree, but it's actually kind of a neat complement to their run game. And I think Klein is going to scheme up an offense that uses him well. I also like that he's complimented by Terry Bussey, who I think pretty highly of. I think Bussey's really good.
That was a 5-star we were after heavy. Everyone was
we
after
loved Bussey.
Yeah. So he was a ball. And then they got him Amari Nyblack from us.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah. But if he does maximize, it's a pretty interesting core of weapons. You know?
If he does maximize, should be his first name.
Yeah. But yeah, he's a projection guy, but it is an interesting room. I think they upgraded it. It'll be fun to watch if that's able to gel. This was something during the offseason that I watched pretty often. We just have to see with Marcel Reed how it all works out because he still has to, you know, be accurate. Oklahoma at five, dude.
Who's that? I was struggling.
You'll say it probably somewhere here, but.
Yeah, what were my other options?
Yeah, I'm trying to even think.
Vanderbilt, you got Eli Stowers, but the receiving group is terrible.
Yeah.
Mississippi State, you've got Mosley, but Craver transferred out and Kevin Coleman transferred out.
Kevin Coleman transferred out again?
Yeah.
Dude, he's been everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's not a ton of options. Who's the – it's Gibson. Who's the one from Pine Bluff, Arkansas? Yeah. That guy looks like a pro.
He broke his leg. He was an FCS All-American. This is like – so, look, if Jim Nagy is really good at his trade, fifth might be low for them. I mean, that's potentially true, right? But he's brought in a couple of big, small school guys that he says project. And so if they hit, OU's got legit threats outside. And that'll be a nice compliment to Deion Burks inside. Their tight end room is horrific. But
it's been horrific.
But, you know, Arbuckle, if you study him, he doesn't use the tight end anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, they want you spread out. So anything that lets Mateer not have guys in the box so he can run.
Yes, they're trying to lighten the box and then get Mateer throwing deep and then running the ball.
Do you think receiver is one of the easier up projections? For instance, he's 6'2", 250 pounds, and he plays at Arkansas Pine Bluff. That'll probably work up here.
I mean, certainly size-wise, we don't know. I mean, like I said, I went and tried to watch him, and he's going against, like, a cornerback from Alcorn State.
Yeah, you're purely just looking at it. He's like, he looks right.
I think they timed him. I think they brought him in for a visit and, like, said, hey, go put on shorts and go out on the, like, on our turf, and we're going to time you. And if you run a 4.7, we're sending you home. And if you run a 4.5 or less, let's talk.
Do you think Terry Bussey's playing the wrong position? I heard Ian say he was very bulked up now and looks uncomfortable. I think Ian's referring to that practice clip where he's, like, trying to catch a red zone fade or whatever. But he definitely looked a little slower, and also the ball placement was really bad. So,
well, also, Bussey's not the guy you send on a fade.
Yeah, it was a red zone fade.
Yeah, I mean, he's like a screen and bubble guy. I would use him a lot in the run game.
I was going to say, you put him in the backfield, you can do a lot of stuff there.
You can do a lot of interesting stuff with him. And I don't buy into Reed as a thrower, but, you know, our buddy Will Gallagher, the crack photographer for Inside Texas, you can find his awesome work at Gallagher Studios. He's the guy who provides the amazing photos for the Longhorn Prospectus. Links are in the description. Will said, when you're at field level, you really appreciate how quick Marcel Reed is. He said it does not translate to television. He's like, the guy is legitimately quick. And then the other thing he said was, you also don't appreciate how skinny he is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be the trick, because you got a running quarterback that's light, right? So a quarterback that's going to take a lot of hits, you have to see how that works.
Well, they were smart. They did a good job getting Jacob Zeno in the offseason. That was a smart addition for them.
Yeah. All righty. So OU could have the good receiving core. That'll be interesting.
Hey, you know who these people need to add to their lives to make it better?
Who, Paul?
The best mortgage guy in the whole damn world, Connor.
Wow.
Gabe Winslow. Message today is short, sweet, and simple. Reach him at 832-557-1095 as I destroy the ad. Here's the deal. If your interest rate right now is 6.5% or higher, call Gabe right now, and there is a very high probability he can refi you for free. What's the catch? There is no catch. Oh, he's going to make my equity large. No, it's none of that nonsense. He is privy to some pretty special programs because he's a high volume, high performer. Every time I talk to the guy, he's on a freaking award trip because he dominates. This dude can refi you for free, lower your payment, and everything else stays the same. There is a very high probability he can do that. Seriously, if your interest rate is 6.5% or higher, call him, and you can kind of do this infinitely. I know people who have refied with him 4 or 5 times. So give him a call, 832-557-1095. Say Texas Homer sent you, and then in the Venmo transaction, put drugs.
Yes, there we go. For accounting purposes.
Okay, guys.
That's wide receiver room. We were going to do DBs, but let's get a little crazy, Paul. Let's go to offensive line. How about that?
No.
Yes, we have.
No, Connor, no. They're not ready for it. Chat's not ready for it. The content's too good.
With all the good news coming out of our defensive line scrimmage reports, interior line, edge, I think it'll be interesting to pay attention to the offensive lines we have to go against, because if they're real good, we want to see if we can top them and destroy their success. A&M, baby.
Look at Justin Wales in the chat.
Can he lower my 3.7?
Hey, bro, we're not rape bragging. I told you specifically who should be calling him. Be better, Justin Wales.
Lucky guy, man.
Good job. Congrats on your low rate, guy.
Yeah. Just call Gabe. Just see what's up, man. Just tell him hello. He gets lonely sometimes, too.
You know what? Just call
him. He's a human being, man. You can just call him and say what's up. All right. Texas A&M, number one line. Why is that so, Paul? I think one name here is clear.
Yep. I shall tell you so. So Armaj Reed Adams is the guy who sort of headlines the line. He's going to be the first team All-SEC guard at the conclusion of the season. They're all upperclassmen. They bring back basically all of their starters and all of their best key reserves. The guys they lost are net benefits. Like TJ Shanahan transferred out to Penn State. That's a good thing for A&M, in my opinion, having watched him play. They've got 4 starting seniors. And I don't think they're going to have like a first round guy. in their class. I think they're going to have multiple NFL draft picks on this line. And I know people are sort of been like, oh, A&M sucked on the line and all this stuff. Part of that is they were playing guys early and they were playing them out of position, like Chase Bezontis. They were playing him at tackle. He's a guard. So you can say, well, he sucked at tackle. Well, he's a guard. And he was playing there out of necessity. He's now 2 years later in his development. And you know what? The guy's going to get drafted. So A&M's actually going to be good on the offensive line. In my opinion, this is going to be your best SEC rushing team. I think they're going to
pair that with good back, man.
And the receivers and like how good they are and like the screen and run game.
And Reed can run.
I think they're going to lead the SEC in rushing. So don't take them lightly, even though they're Aggies.
Dang it.
I like the Florida O-line as much, but as I explained in there, WordPress hates ties and it won't let me put number one twice. Connor's also laughing because I'm graphically illiterate.
Yeah. What is going on? The files are in the computer?
Yes. They're in the computer?
All right. So Florida, too, they also have – they play this pro style, right? A lot of gap. Like, they're a mashing kind of unit. And normally they're
a zone running team.
They're a
– outside zone.
They're outside zone?
Yeah, they're two-thirds zone. That's always been Billy Napier's thing.
For real?
Yeah, I guess they're big-time outside gap. No, they're zone, baby.
Wow. I didn't expect them to be outside zone team, honestly.
Yep.
But they do have good size. I think that's probably what's getting me too. But
yeah, they're gigantic. Jake Slaughter is the best center in college football. There's a guy in Iowa who's really good, but I think Slaughter might be the dude. And when you've got a really good center and you run a lot of zone, man, if you can single block a nose with your center, you are cooking with gas. Like you're ahead of the curve.
He's a first rounder.
You know, I mean, the NFL, how do they value a center, right? I mean, I think he could be – he'll either be a first or second rounder, so I don't know.
Cool.
But they've got good – they've got a good O-line. And that's the thing is people think Florida's all DJ Lagway. I get it. He's the catalyst needed for them to be good. But they're actually really good on both sides of the line of scrimmage this year.
Interior.
So that's for Georgia, and then Ohio State is right above them.
Okay, let's talk Ohio State.
Their interior offensive line is set. Where we can make a little hay might be the exterior. So they brought in Ethan Onionwa from Rice, who logged 34 starts for the Owls. He was good there, but he's been playing G5 defensive ends. He has not been going against Colin Simmons. And he's not going against anyone in that Ohio State edge room who can duplicate our edges. So I think there's a real opportunity for us to give him like a welcome to big time football up in Columbus opportunity. The guy opposite him, Austin Sirveld, was kind of a career guard. Apparently he's a solid right tackle. But again, I'm not sure he's quite got his sea legs yet when he's going against guys like Brad Spence and Colin Simmons and Umu Azulu, guys like that. I think it's going to be a little bit of a wake-up call for those guys. So we'll see.
We got next, Georgia.
Georgia's rebuilding their offensive line. They lost four guys, man, and three of them were NFL draft picks and then one free agent signing. Ian asked Anthony Hill, at Media Days, who are the two most physical teams you played? And he said Georgia and Florida, interestingly. And I think he meant Georgia for the offensive line. Those guys are gone. So they're rebuilding from scratch. I'm going to have a thesis that Georgia is – I don't think they're going to be playing in the SEC title game this year. I'll say that. Because I think they've got some questions at quarterback. I think they're rebuilding their defensive line and they're rebuilding their offensive line. And typically Georgia slaughters people at the line of scrimmage.
Yes.
And I don't think they're going to be able to do that this year, Connor.
Unless they play us.
I knew that was coming.
Unless they play us, dude.
Oh, the bitterness.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird with Georgia, man. Just like I saw a graphic for like the top 10 players in Georgia. And man, the out-of-state schools are rating Georgia. And that's kind of been the joke is like Georgia doesn't get Georgia guys as often as they should. But it is pretty jarring to see like on a top 10 that they have one or two of Georgia's top player, and Georgia puts out credible talent too. It's right. So it's a little interesting. I think they're in the new world now where they can't stockpile everything. And then the pitch of just like, well, where Georgia is fading slowly too. So it's just, it's interesting. They still end up with top classes.
But well, I was going to say, let's be clear.
Yeah.
This O-line's not going to be a bunch of scrubs. They're just inexperienced guys.
Right.
Who are all going to eventually be very good.
Walk-ons for Georgia, dude. Good luck.
Man. Georgia's Georgia's probably a year away on both lines of scrimmage.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see in the AP poll what they think of Georgia, which was pretty interesting. And then finally, Kentucky. Yes, yeah. Kentucky, which is Paul's aware of his unique take because Coach Top was very upset with this.
Coach Top, how dare you? Yeah. So here's what happened, Coach Top. They completely remade their offensive line in the offseason. So they brought in a guy named Joshua Braun. And if you're a ball knower, you know who that is. He's a guy who was Arkansas's best offensive lineman, and he was their nastiest offensive lineman. He's got 32 starts there. He's a six-year senior. And if you go watch the Texas-Arkansas game, when they were pushing us around a couple of times on some drives, Joshua Braun was the guy they were running behind. So Kentucky went and plucked him in the portal. What does that say about Arkansas? That you got Kentucky snatching dudes off your roster.
Pretty sad.
It's not embarrassing when like Texas or Michigan cucks them, but Kentucky, bro. So they got Braun. They got a very good player from Bowling Green. He's a 6'7" guy, all MAC selection, 3-year starter. His name's Alex Walschlager. He's a 6-year senior. He's going to be starting at tackle, which is a big weakness for them. They went and got another guy who's a 3-year starter from New Mexico that a lot of people were after, 6-year senior. If you're noticing a pattern here,
right,
you're kind of getting what I'm putting down here. They do bring back their one returning offensive lineman they didn't jettison. His name's Farmer, and he was their most aggressive guy last year. And you can watch the Texas-Kentucky game. He actually gets after Alfred Collins on a couple of snaps. Collins ends up whipping on him. But I'm just telling you, Kentucky is going to have the ability to line up in 12 personnel. And if you aren't eating your Wheaties, they're going to be able to run the ball on you. And that's what they're trying to do. Their two tackles are 6'8 and 6'7". So they're trying to get like that length outside to prevent immediate edge pressure. And they are 6'6", 325 across the board with 5.4 years of college football under their belt on average. So here's the rub that will make you laugh, Coach Top. Classic Mark Stoops, right? You rebrand, you go, all right, we're gonna run the ball down people's throats. They go and get Deion Dowdell, who was the big back for Nebraska last year. You're like, you're seeing it all take shape. Their receivers are bad. So what do, Connor? They go and get an air raid quarterback, Zach Calzada. Why would you not get a dual threat if you're going to line up and run the ball?
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Well, they lost Dane Key, right, and Barrion Brown.
Yeah, they lost both of their key receivers. Yeah. I mean, they have the worst receiving core of the SEC next to maybe Vanderbilt.
I was doing a Sarkisian scout on Kentucky. I was like, Barrion Brown, come on down, Texas Longhorn. Yeah. But he went, you know, but that was the Kentucky. Yeah. So, yeah, Kentucky had some receivers last year. They just could not use them.
So, anyway, that's my Kentucky pitch. That said, they're going to lose to Toledo in the opener, and y'all going to all be like, LOL, Paul.
Yeah.
But what I'm telling you is that they didn't fit their final important piece of skill personnel to their offensive line change. They should have gone and grabbed the Southern Mississippi State, like the Southern Miss dual threat quarterback who was at Marshall last year. You could have gone and got that guy for $400K and had a dual threat, and you could have run the ball on people this year. But they went and got Zout Kazada. He's a pure drop back passer. So they're just going to have this very conventional offense with terrible receivers. So I don't understand what they're doing.
When you're bad, you got to crystallize your strategy and yes. do that 1,000%. You got to be
commit.
Yeah, you got to be an X team. We are an option team. We are this team.
So Vanderbilt, right?
Right.
Like if you're going to be a bear, be a grizzly.
Yeah.
Don't be a freaking panda.
We'll be a sun bear.
Sun bear. You know what? Sun bears actually very aggressive.
Are they?
Yeah.
They're weird looking. That's all I know.
They maul the crap out of people in Asia all the time.
I didn't know that. Will Georgia or UT have the better offensive line this year?
We shall see. I think it's going to be UT, but we got to stop having injuries, man. I think Texas having Goosby at left tackle is a huge advantage, right, that we've got. They've got Ernest Green, who's a good player at tackle. He's moving over to right tackle this year. He actually struggled a little bit last year. In fact, Baron Sorrell gave him a hard time. So did Trey Moore a couple of times in that SEC title game. But I think we'll ultimately have the better O-line. We got to stop getting injured. We can do another – we'll probably save this for the deep dive, but I'll just say I'm a little disappointed in Kyle Flood in some ways, and I'll get into that more maybe down the road.
Yeah, we need to maximize – be able. The point of getting big five stars and top guys is so you can leverage that advantage.
We had a 2 to 3 year window to build out the offensive line for 25 and 26 because we knew this was coming. And in some areas, we crapped the bed, to be honest, Connor. So,
yeah,
not good.
That'll be a good deep dive.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
We'll get it pulled.
You ready to go to AP poll Ewers mania? Fit in our hour here.
Let's talk about Ewers because I know you want your – I know you want to eat your
– Schadenfreude or whatever. All right. Before we keep going, guys, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
All right. Who's ready?
I'm open.
Back to school today, at least in my town. So y'all know where to go hang out. Homer needs his pound of Ewers flesh. Yes. We'll do AP real quick before. I like what Paul has to say about everything. Paul also knows the landscape of college football better than what I know. Paul's like, the funny thing about Southern Iowa, and I'm just like, yeah.
I'll tell you something about North Dakota State that people don't understand.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, dude.
Hey, man, sports gambling will raise your interest because, you know, there's not a lot of gambling insights to be had on, like, Ohio State, Texas.
Yeah, there's no edge. Everyone's but there.
There's a lot of edge when you, like, learn about, you know, Central Michigan, Chippewas.
Yeah. Yeah, Paul can re-perform as everyone is overrated.
Everyone's overrated. Speech. That's the one thing that's clear.
All right.
So, put an interesting statistic on Inside Texas, Connor. Would you like to hear it?
Sure, I would.
Last year, 13 of the top 25 in the AP preseason poll finished outside of that poll, to include our friends at A&M, which is like their annual ritual, right?
Yeah.
But 13 of the 25. Connor, that's 52%. I just did the math in my head.
Wow, dude.
That's how sharp I am.
Yeah, you are sharp, dude.
I am sharp. But who here is going to disappoint? You give your answers, and then I'll correct you.
Disappoint just meaning serious disappointment or just not going to end up ranked?
Just not going to end up ranked at the end.
Not going to end up ranked. I don't know. Let me see.
I'm not saying it's going to be 13, but it could be. I mean, usually it's as many as 10.
Probably Oklahoma, right? Because you're starting – so here's where I'm coming from. The preseason AP poll almost mirrors exactly what the real AP poll is going to be because people aren't original. So I'm based off your thing. So if OU's 18th, they're going to have Michigan, Auburn, us. Their schedule's crazy. So if you're 18, that just takes two or three losses and you're going to disappear. So it's more about if OU is ranked fourth, maybe not, but just being that low with that schedule, OU will end up disappearing after a few losses.
Okay.
Florida can go either way.
Yeah, they're going to finish 7th or 34th.
Yeah, Florida can go like, either way.
Yeah.
I don't know Michigan's schedule well enough. I do think they're going to be improved.
Hey, here's a hint.
What?
Too many Big 12 teams.
Yeah, you're just going with the classic candle. Also with Iowa State, when you're at 22, a loss can knock you right down. So –
ba, 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 ba. Yeah. Good job, Connor.
Yeah.
Iowa State.
Thank you. I knew it. And that's then fair. Let me try to see who else could fall off the map here. Indiana's schedule is hilarious. They're probably going to end up number one in the country.
Look around lucky number 13. Did you read this, Connor?
I can read, dude.
Did you read this?
Who do you talk about? South Carolina?
South Carolina had an amazing defense last year, right? They lost five dudes to the NFL draft off that defense. All five in the first four rounds. That is one of many snippets you will learn if you read by Thinking Texas
Football. But what about Lenore Sellers, dude?
He makes Lenore Sellers play. Is awesome. I love that dude. He's like Steve Urkel on steroids. But they lost the core of that football team, and they have a really difficult back half of the schedule. So they're mark my words, they're going to start the year 5-1, and they're going to limp to about a 7-5 finish, and they're going to finish outside of the top 25.
What do you think about Texas Tech, Paul?
Actually, believe it or not, they've got a chance, and here's why. Oh, it's not because they're buying recruits in the portal, because they bought transfers in the portal.
Correct.
Because McGuire has proved that he's not very good at recruiting and developing, and so now they just go buy people that other people developed. They will have the best defensive line in the Big 12 by far.
This is my thing. People are like, it'll never work at Tech. That's like thinking about if Tech's in the SEC. This model will work as long as there's not incredible cultural issues. This
guess
will.
What? If you buy a bunch of good players, you're going to beat the crap out of Arizona.
Correct. And so it's that thing. It's like Tech should. And if they don't, then you're like, all right, McGuire's got to go. And then Campbell can come out and admit that he is the head coach. But
that's it. If Aaron Morton gets hurt again, yeah, you know, not good.
Michael Hudson, SMU, right?
I think SMU, I think they lost a lot more on the lines of scrimmage than like the layperson understands.
I just love Lashley. I just think he's awesome. So yeah, but I don't know their raw. I'm just going off of whose clinics I like to watch. But
hey, someone in the chat said Boise State. I think it was Burt Reynolds. Here's the deal about Boise. Yeah, they lost Gentry. I get that. And actually, I'm not a huge Maddox Madsen fan, the quarterback. The Mountain West is actually down this year. So San Jose State was going to be their main challenger probably. They lost their three best defensive players in the portal to three major P4 schools. And they're going to be starting for all three of those schools. So Boise State could be down. I think you're correct in that analysis. Everyone around them is down too. And so I think you're actually going to see them still finish
their program culture.
Yeah. And if Boise State, they kind of get that weird helmet bump from like the average dolt journalist who's like, Boise State's good. Then they just fill them in, right? Yeah. And they don't look at strength of schedule.
The turf, it hypnotizes you, man. You can't help it.
The turf is amazing.
Who outside the top 10 has the best chance of finishing in the top 10?
Well, we talked about Florida. They have huge upside if they can just freaking get healthy. Who outside the top 10 has potential?
Utah. What do you think about Arizona State? Because Dillingham's kind of been a little bit like, I don't know if it's just coaching psychology, but he's like, we got to earn it. Did you see yesterday? He was like, you think a top 11 team would have an indoor practice facility? Like talking to his doctor. Yeah. That was funny. But Arizona State, if they don't, they're already the darling, right? Like the media just likes them. I like them too. So there's that if they win. So Arizona State, what do you think about Illinois? You've been big on them, right? All offseason.
Yeah, not number 12 in the country big. I was big on them. Like they're going to exceed their win total of 7.5. That's not number 12
gonna win,
in the country.
Paul's going to win some money. Excited about them.
Yeah. I would say I'll give you a team that could finish in the top 10 that's not in the top 25. Utah. Here's why. They got Dampier from New Mexico. If you've not seen this guy, he is an amazing runner, like dual threat quarterback. And Utah probably has one of the best three or four offensive lines in college football. So in the Big 12, that could be a pretty formidable combination. And typically you can rely on Utah to play pretty good defense. So, I don't know. It's an interesting dark horse. I'll just throw it out there.
Could Indiana get in by having a weak schedule? I'm going to pull up their schedule real quick.
They play enough decent teams that I don't think they can make it in the top 10. Okay. You know, a big game that's kind of under the radar, it's funny to say, but Indiana plays Illinois fairly early in the season, and it's going to have a big impact on both of their seasons.
Illinois, they play Oregon. Penn State, yeah, they're not going to be in. I'm trying to, anybody who can go in the top 10 that's not, like, right on the edge of the top 10. I'd have to be Florida. What do you think of Michigan this year?
I think they have a very favorable schedule, but I don't think they're going to be very good. I think just too much youth. I mean, you and I talked about Underwood. Like, dude, it looks good.
He looks incredible.
He's a true freshman, and they have no speed outside, man.
That doesn't matter, dude. They play Michigan football, man.
That's what I got. Okay.
And all on my preview, I was like, they don't have anybody they can catch. All the Michigan fans were like, we don't need wide receivers. This is Michigan. I was like, everyone needs wide receivers, man.
They got real cocky at the end of the year.
They got great. And yeah, opening
because the season. Because they beat Ohio State and they beat Bama in the bowl, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They were hype, man. They were difficult to deal with.
Ryan Nelson had a very poignant comment about Michigan. Worse O-line play. Something that people have not been paying attention to who aren't ball knowers, the standard of Michigan offensive line play has been down every year since Harbaugh departed. Keep your eye on that.
I'm trying to see who else received votes. BYU, Baylor's interesting. I think Baylor can get in the top 25 for sure. Not top 10. I mean, but
Baylor has some awesome early spotlight games.
Exactly. That'll tell you what's going to happen.
Auburn and SMU. And if you look at their schedule, they get all of the Big 12's best teams in Waco.
Okay.
And you don't just go into Waco and win a football game, Connor.
Yeah, dude, that's crazy. That Waco environment is tough, dude.
Now, I mean, so the thing with Baylor, interestingly enough, really dynamic offense, but their defense, little rough, and you think it's the opposite with Aranda, but no. In fact, their offense is really dynamic. They've got skill position players at every spot. That defense is kind of rough. So Auburn, Baylor, y'all got to watch that. I mean, we've got so many awesome opening games, but Auburn, Baylor is going to be really entertaining. Watch it. And the consequences for Auburn are so dire. If they go on the road and lose early, that team could just like freaking crumble like dust.
Totally implode.
But if they win, look out.
I just want any post-game press conference with Baylor. Aranda's the best, man. How he's able to relate the strangest concepts to football. I just want to go on a meditation retreat with Dave Aranda, just a silent retreat for a week.
Here's the funniest thing. He got, like, you know, the PC police because he's talking about midgets. But yep. If you watch the movie, I actually understood exactly what he was saying.
I know. He's just – but to be that deep, you know, in thought, watching just dumb movies is – why I absolutely love Aranda, man. Like, he's awesome, man. In a world of coaches that give a bunch of canned answers, right? Like, you need Aranda, you need Kiffin, you need guys that are fun and honest. So I love Dave Aranda. I want his success.
Wasn't he Tom Herman's roommate in college or something?
I don't know.
Okay, fine.
He just has one of the best and worst clinics ever, where it's like he's basically drawing things on a chalkboard in a basement. You can't even see what's going on, but you're like, this is still good stuff to see a Aranda break down a defense. So that'll be interesting. Who else do we got here? Tulane, Nebraska, UNLV, Toledo.
I would sell Tulane. So Tulane used to be a very safe team to put in your top 25 because they had sort of P4 infrastructure on both lines of scrimmage. And they had Willie Fritz coaching, who's a very good, very underrated coach. They actually got really hit hard by the portal. Really hard. Like, Mekhi Hughes is going to be starting for Oregon at running back. A bunch of other guys they lost, like infrastructure guys on their D-line. Watch that Northwestern Tulane game opener with interest is all I'll say.
Liberty, Navy.
Liberty, based on schedule, has a good chance of being a top 25 team. Not deservedly, but Conference USA is so bad, Ben. They have a real shot.
Louisiana Lafayette.
I don't know who put that in there.
It was somebody. It's one of those joke votes, I guess, where that's your alma mater.
It's some Cajun living in Brobridge.
Colorado, what do you think will happen now with Deion? That Shadur and the legend Hunters go down? I think it's just natural, man. They had a really fun offense, but it'll be tricky. All right, cool, man. AP top 25. When people say it doesn't matter, don't listen to them. It does matter. It gives you a free loss if you're ranked high. It matters.
You think it's worth a whole free loss?
I think it gives you a free loss. So, like, if you're like 15th, right? If you're Texas and you're number one and you lose, you're gonna lose down to five. And then that's still going to give you another loss as long as it's not crazy. Now you're at 15, right?
Yeah, people cement their opinions, which is really unfair, right?
Realistically, but you should wait until like two games into conference play to even release this. But it's beneficial if you do have good perception of your team.
So who in the top 10 do we think finishes outside the top 10? How about that? I'll go Oregon.
Well, Miami, because if they lose any game.
Miami, because they do Miami stuff.
Yeah. Georgia's interesting, man. Because who are...
Maybe LSU, dude.
Yeah, but they're so low. It's like any loss, they're gone, you know, unless they win a big game and shoot up first.
Well, I'm talking about the end of the year, like when all the bullets are fired. I mean, I'm saying LSU might be a 3 or 4 loss team.
What's their schedule looking like?
Is it crazy? For SEC, it's mid-tier.
I think Clemson's going to end up pretty high.
I think Georgia could be outside the top 10. How about that?
That's what I said. I said Georgia.
Yeah, but I said it.
Okay, cool. So now it's valuable. Good point.
Yes.
Who do you have? Do you care who's number one? Do you think it's Texas? Do you think it's Penn State? What do you
think? I don't think it matters. I mean, it's whatever. I mean, we're number one and we're a dog in our opener.
I know.
But what does that mean?
How can you be number one and a dog? It's weird.
We're a preseason dog in two spots.
Yeah.
And we're the number one team. Does not compute, right?
It does seem like the voters are getting less traditional, though, which I like, right? Because the basic thing would just be like Ohio State is number one.
Mm-hmm. They're kind of champions.
So they're projecting a little more than they generally do, which I like. But I am mad that I would have liked Ohio State and Texas 1 and 2 or vice versa just because I want a 1 and 2 matchup to open the year. I think it's good for the sport. So I was a little bummed, even though I think this is right. And to me, man, I almost feel like Clemson at 3. So some combination of Texas, Penn State, Clemson, Ohio State.
You're chewing me up here, Connor, because I'm writing a series of articles on Inside Texas right now. And if you're not a part of that conversation, you should all join. Called the 6 teams that can actually win the national title. And I've released the first one. It was Penn State. The second one I'm going to release today, it's going to be Clemson.
Cool.
And then I've got 4 more coming after that. You'll have to tune in and find out who they are.
Yeah, at InsideTexas.com. All right, Paul. It's Quinn Ewers time.
Oh, Connor.
Preseason, Dolphins played the Bears. Quinn gets in, for context, Quinn gets in at the very, you know, the end of the game. He's after Tua and Zach Wilson. And what stuck out to me is the opening drive, or one of them, Tua drives the whole field with the McDaniels concepts, right? Just taking advantage. I like that offense. But then they get down to the goal line and they get stuffed 3 times straight. I like the 1 or the 2. And the first thing is that's sending off alarm bells to me, right? Because that sounds like Texas. And and Quinn doesn't solve that problem, okay, or hasn't for Texas. And then you're hearing the whole time like, man, this offensive line sucks in announcer speak, which also doesn't help Quinn. So that worries me. So my fit with McDaniels, I'm like, this is a great system because McDaniels, Shanahan, they hide quarterbacks really well. The quarterbacks are very systematized. You don't have to go out and win the game for your team when you're in those offenses. They just put their quarterbacks in good situations. And the offense is very similar to Sark. A lot of short motions, a lot of crossers, outside zone, these kind of things. So to me, I'm like, this is a great fit for Quinn to try to maximize them because it protects the quarterback. It does a ton of the concepts that Quinn is good at. For instance, the preseason, you know, intermediate over that everybody was fawning over, right? Like, so that shows me that he knows what Quinn does well and he's using that. So that's valuable. That's good. But then I see their red zone stats from last year suck, that they're basically a finesse team, and that the offensive line is suspect. So these are, it's almost too similar to Sark's offense where I was like, what's going on here? So then Quinn comes in later in the second half, right? He's not with the ones, twos type of thing, right? So this is context as well, but he's also not necessarily facing all the Bears ones and twos either, right? So maybe it's proportional a little bit. And then he has a rough, I don't have a stat line, Paul. Do you have it pulled up specifically? I can get
it. No, it was not good.
I can use the internet, dude.
Use the internet. Use its powers.
Yeah. And so
I would enter box score Dolphins Bears.
Dude, good idea, man. So Quinn goes in and he goes 5 for 18 with a 27.8% completion percentage, 91 yards throwing, averages 5.1, zero touchdowns, zero interceptions, but he tacks on two fumbles, right?
18.2 yards per completion.
Nice, dude. So here's a couple things. Give him favorites. There were some drops. So they weren't doing great there. And then I heard, you know, his receivers, you know, couldn't win versus the DB. It's because Quinn was putting the ball on their chest on a crosser, which is you don't want to do that. You want to put it in front of them. That's why the DB is able to grab on and long arm it. And so there was some placement there that the receivers are getting blamed for, but it was actually a ball placement issue with Quinn. And then, of course, he gets overwhelmed. Anytime, like, Quinn has to be – you cannot allow him to be in passing downs, which is impossible in the NFL. But anytime he's in the passing down, that kind of stuff, they pin their ears back. That offensive line sucks. And then Quinn, after the first kind of fumble, he fumbles on, like, their two-yard line, which is disastrous, right? But after that, he doesn't look as strong. He doesn't look as confident. His feet break down again. He's doing these weird things where he wants to run up in the pocket and then run sideways and then try to throw it when really he had the time a couple of times to get it out. Then they send out like an all-out blitz against him at the end of the game. He fumbles as well. But on that first fumble, you see the defender just – he's running out to the side trying to roll out, get away from it. And he just doesn't have the strength, man. Like the D-end or whoever it was just wraps him up and – engulfs him and just you see his arm not be able to take the impact of the arm from the defender and the ball goes out. So just kind of more of the same issues there, which is not surprising. I don't know what fans thought were going to happen, that he was going to change in the 6 months, but not a good performance from Quinn. He needs to be very systematized. What do you think, Paul?
So that was a very good summary. At the risk of being the guy who refuses to tease out the Gordian knot and just comes up and like cuts it in half. Did he play like a seventh round draft pick?
Yeah. Well, he played like a shouldn't be in the NFL pick. Well, but yeah, that's as close as you can get.
You understand what I'm asking? Maybe he's a seventh round draft pick.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So it's, yeah, but that's just what's, it's tough. And also just beware in general, guys. Don't get your hopes up from preseason camp, like there for any player ever, because it's deceptive in that regard. So it's tricky, man. I don't see the path for him to have a lot of success. And if he is, it would have to be in that situation, like a McDaniels or a Shanahan kind of world.
I mean, he was drafted behind Graham Mertz.
Yeah, and well, then they start taking off like D2 quarterbacks before. I mean, he's literally the last quarterback picked.
Right? Cam Miller, the guy from the Dakotas, one of the Dakota states, always confuse him.
Yeah, and then you had the Raiders pass on him, you know.
What's funny is initially everyone was like, oh, the Dolphins, that's a great destination for Quinn because the receivers. But you forget the supportive infrastructure is what matters. It's the offensive line. It's like he's got to have it clean. And if it gets messy, it gets messy. So
it's going to be a tough road for him. And to start, like, you know, it's not a surprise what I thought about Quinn. I thought he was a limiter on the offense. And people are like, well, we had a bunch of success. I'm like, yeah, we could have had more success. The flip side is I'm not a you should have started Arch guy, right? I didn't think there was any kind of option there. And I think really for his – I mean, if you go to me and you tell me, look, I have a quarterback that can throw really good screens and he can throw intermediate, that's about it. Sark made a lot of headway with that limitation, right? Like he's not going to be good on passing downs. He has no mobility. He misses deep a lot. Sark still made a lot of hay from those limitations. So I've heard the flip side, right? That Sark took a number one overall quarterback and now he's a seventh rounder. Also, Sark didn't rate him, but also you can look at it the flip side. There's a bright side of like, yeah, Sark took a seventh rounder almost to the championship twice with these crazy limitations in a Sark offense that wants explosive plays. So it can go kind of either way there.
I got nothing more to add, Connor. You nailed it.
Yeah. All right, guys. I had fun hanging out.
I had fun. Chat, you were lively and amusing today. Nice job.
It was a fun one. Good work, y'all. All right. Today we got recruiting intel. We have the
Big announcement today?
There is. Yeah, the Edge is going to announce on Pat McAfee's show, Jake Krell, however you say his name. I think right now, I can't remember what the latest from Inside Texas was. It was a real battle with OU, right? So we'll see how that goes.
Doesn't OU have to win this recruitment as like a PR thing right now? Yeah,
it kind of feels like it. And so it's like one of those ones where even if you lose out, hopefully you make your opponent pay over market for a player.
Yeah.
So there could be a slight win in that. But OU really needs this one. But I just said, like, dude, just talk to Nagy. He'll find a two-star that's comparable. Why do they even need to do this, man? They'll moneyball this, dude.
He's got a guy at Abilene Christian who's pretty much a perfect simulacrum of Krell.
Yeah. So watch that on McAfee's show. We don't know how it's going to go. I'm not putting any predictions. I also don't even put in predictions. But just talking position, I don't know. So, but anyways, regardless, we're still going to have recruiting intel. And then Girl Herd is going to drop tonight at 5, y'all. And then, of course, staying locked in with your horns. You can get all the recruiting. It's winding down a little bit, but 2027 has a really cool class coming up. So pay attention for the next wave. And then also all the practice reports. We're super locked in right now for everything to do with the team. So you can get Inside Texas for $1 for your first week. As a bonus, your membership includes a complimentary year to The Athletic by Paul's Books. Links in the description. You will not regret it. You have, 20-ish days to do your studying. Chat, thank you guys. Paul, thank you as well. Y'all have a wonderful day. And of course, it's always brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Peace, y'all.